This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Wednesday, January 10th. I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, why fruit growers are still using a toxic pesticide for their crop, and a look at your AM 580 weather forecast for Champaign-Urbana, but first, today's news. The chancellor of the University of Illinois' Urbana campus is speaking out after staff discovered a website with entries calling for violence against Native Americans. AM 580's Tom Rogers has more.
Last fall, a page entitled, "If They Get Rid of the Chief, I'm Becoming a Racist," appeared on Facebook. It's a popular social networking website among students across the country. One student who posted to the site said he hates Redskins and wants them to die. Another says a leader in the movement against the Chief Illiniwek symbol should get a tomahawk to the face. Facebook has since removed the page from its site. Chancellor Richard Herman says the posts went well beyond irony or humor.
I would call upon the members of our community to join me in an effort which will be clear that we don't support this kind of behavior or don't tolerate it. I mean, this has gone well beyond what anyone would call free speech as far as I'm concerned.
Wanda Pillow, the director of the U of I's American Indian Studies program, declined comment, but a release from the department says the posts violate student code and that no university can function normally if students explicitly call for violence against other students. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
If Champaign's electoral board follows the recommendations of the city attorney, Mayor Jerry Schweihart will remain on the ballot this spring and won't have an election opponent. City Attorney Fred Stavins yesterday asked the board to dismiss a challenge to the mayor's nominating papers by Democratic activist Michael Richards. Stavins says Schweihart's failure to include the word Champaign on a statement of candidacy wouldn't cause voter confusion. Meanwhile, Charles Mingy's mayoral candidacy appears to be in jeopardy. Stavins yesterday suggested the electoral board uphold a challenge to his nominating petitions because of a lack of valid signatures and failure to include the proper election date. City Council member Tom Bruno served as electoral board chair in both cases. He says despite the large number of objections to those running for mayor as well as city council, the petitions are not difficult to fill out.
And what we're seeing in this round of this election is a lot of objections that have no merit. As I said, I think most all of these petitions are perfectly fine, and that's why I don't think it's that hard to do this correctly.
On Tuesday, the Electoral Board also made initial rulings in favor of four candidates for at-large city council seats who face challenges to their petitions. Challenges to four others will be heard on Thursday. The Electoral Board plans to rule on all cases by next Tuesday. Urbana City Council could take up a proposal for a Citizens Police Review Board in the next 2 months, according to one city council member. That plan will be tempered by restrictions negotiated in a new labor contract with Urbana Police. AM 580's Jim Meadows reports.
The police contract and a related side agreement ratified last month lay out restrictions meant to protect Urbana police officers' civil liberties if the city sets up a civilian review panel to review complaints about police conduct. One notable restriction, the review board could not hire a third-party investigator to look into complaints. Urbana Alderwoman Danielle Chenoweth says she has questions about that and other restrictions, but she remains optimistic about the review board concept.
Even though the police contract does provide some restrictions, I think that we still have the opportunity to have a very strong civilian oversight of the police, because that board can actually act as a studying or kind of investigatory body, even if it can't hire a third-party investigator.
Chenoweth met last night with members of the Champaign County Coalition for Citizens Police Review to discuss the impact of the police contract language. She says for a Citizens Police Review Board to work, police officers must buy into the concept and be confident the panel will act fairly. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Illinois' 94th General Assembly adjourned for the final time yesterday. And as Amanda Vinicky reports, those in charge left a lot of unfinished business for the new mix of lawmakers who will be sworn in today.
Members of the Illinois House cheered when the time came after 2 years to adjourn.
The House, the moment we've all been waiting for. I move that the House adjourn, sine die.
Consumers may not share that excitement, however. The legislature ended its work without finishing some issues that will have an impact on consumers' bank accounts. For starters, many Illinoisans are left paying up to double what they did last year for electricity. Despite taking up several measures that would bring customers relief from those hikes, the House and Senate couldn't agree on one. That means the higher prices remain. And that, says House Minority Leader Tom Cross, a Republican, is unfortunate.
We've got to come up with a solution to this. At the end of the day, if we don't get together, it hurts consumers. You want to be able to, at the end of the day, go turn on a switch, whether you're at a hospital, a school in your house, and make sure you have electricity. And if we don't handle this right, you jeopardize that.
The state Senate also held up a proposal that could have decreased how much some Cook County residents pay in property taxes. Both of those are bound to come up again when the new 95th Assembly takes over. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
Indiana's Department of Education wants $300 million more in basic school funding for the next 2 years, plus an extra $144 million for a full-day kindergarten. State School Superintendent Sue Ellen Reed says the 4% increase over this year's base school funding is in line with inflation. It would make the department's total budget request more than $8.6 billion. Governor Mitch Daniels says he'll propose an aggressive increase for basic education funding, although he hasn't released specific numbers. The Daniels administration is slated to present its budget proposal today. Reed says school districts also face growing health care expenses, utility bills, and other increased costs. For the latest newscast online, go to wiol.uiuc.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Bossert. The EPA has granted a 6-year reprieve for fruit growers to continue to use a highly toxic pesticide, but the decision to eventually phase it out is an uneasy compromise. Environmental health advocates say the delay continues to put farm workers and their families at risk, but growers say they haven't yet found an effective replacement. Bob Allen reports.
No one wants grandma to find a worm when she opens a can of cherries to make a holiday pie. According to regulations, inspectors have to make sure cherries coming to market are worm-free. That puts big pressure on growers when they bring fruit out of the orchard.
And there's a zero tolerance for worms, and if they find one worm, they can reject. Not just that load, they can reject your whole crop for that season.
Francis Otto oversees pesticide spraying for one of the largest cherry orchards along the west side of Michigan. For decades, those who grow cherries and apples have relied mostly on one chemical to keep their fruit worm-free. Some call it the hammer. It knocks down every insect in the orchard for several days, then it degrades quickly under sunlight and rain. It's called azinphos methyl, or AZM. A generation ago, workers were directly exposed when they mixed the chemical, but things have improved since then. Francis Otto fingers a safer, pre-measured packet of AZM.
It's called a water-soluble packet inside of an overwrap, so I can pick this bag up of azinphos, and this plastic bag that it's actually in dissolves in the water, and so workers are not exposed to the actual materials.
That kind of protection is not enough to satisfy groups that sued the EPA on behalf of farm workers and their families. Shelley Davis is an attorney with Farm Worker Justice. She thinks AZM is just too toxic to use at all, and it ought to be phased out right away.
It's so toxic that if you make the slightest error, people are going to get hurt. From moderate symptoms of nausea, vomiting, weakness, to convulsions or death.
There's no record of anyone dying from AZM, and incidents of serious poisoning are fairly rare. But Shelley Davis is mainly worried about effects from low-level exposure to workers over a long time. Studies show workers bring pesticides home on their shoes and clothing. It's in the dust in their houses where children play. In Oregon, migrant workers exposed to AZM showed slower reaction times on tests of how quickly their brains respond than those who don't work in the orchards.
This is a ticking time bomb, because when children get exposed, it gets to the effect that it can affect their intellectual functioning over time.
But health researchers are careful to point out there's no direct link established between AZM exposure and learning deficits. As a precaution, they recommend reducing children's exposure as much as possible. EPA is cutting in half the amount of AZM that can be sprayed over the next 6 years until it's phased out, and workers will have to wait 14 days to re-enter a sprayed orchard instead of 48 hours. Mark Whalen runs the Pesticide Alternative Lab at Michigan State University. He's experimenting with less toxic materials. He says they have to be sprayed more often and much closer to harvest time than AZM to be effective. Whalen has spent 25 years developing ways for growers to keep insects in check other than using chemicals.
And now we're going to have to start over again with these new reduced compounds because they have a whole different set of impacts that we've got to learn all over again.
Whalen says the EPA doesn't have good data on what the long-term health effects might be from exposure to the alternative pesticides. But Shelley Davis with Farmworker Justice says she'd prefer the unknown effects from much less toxic materials to the sure danger of AZM. Either way, Francis Otto at Cherry Bay Orchards says something's got to give. The alternative pesticides he's tried are way more expensive but not as effective as AZM, yet he's still expected to deliver apples and cherries to the buying public free of insect damage for the same price. For the Environment Report, I'm Bob Allen.
The Environment Report is a production of Michigan Radio. Support comes from the Joyce Foundation, the George Gund Foundation, and USDA's Cooperative Extension Service. You can learn more about Environment Report stories and subscribe to weekly podcasts at environmentreport.org.
And the forecast for the region today, mostly sunny skies with a high around 40 degrees. Tonight, mostly clear, the low 32, south winds 15 to 20 miles per hour. And for tomorrow, mostly sunny, the high around 48 degrees, breezy with south winds 20 to 25 miles per hour. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Wednesday, January 10th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, will.uiuc.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.